p.m. in the Victoria Hall front lobby, students can drop by our stem cell info booth, learn more about QUBT, and enjoy pizza and snacks at no cost. More information can be found at the link of our...
And welcome back to Melodies of Myth, where we explore short tales with a lot of music and a lot of fun. So, I am super excited that you're tuning in this week, and let's get into our music.
ਹੱਥ ਮੋੜੀਆਂ ਏ ਰਾਹ ਵਿੱਚ ਰਹਿ ਗਈਆਂ ਦੁਆਂ ਤੇਰਾ ਇੰਤਜ਼ਾਰ ਕੀਤਾ ਤੈਨੂੰ ਬੜਾ ਪਿਆਰ ਕੀਤਾ ਸਾਰਾ ਕੁਛ ਸੀ ਆਉਂਦੇ ਵਜਾ ਕਿਸਮਤ ਬਦਲਦੀ ਵੇਖੀ ਮੈਂ ਜਗ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਬਦਲਦੇ ਵੇਖੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਮੈਂ ਰੱਬ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਕਿਸਮਤ ਬਦਲਦੀ ਵੇਖੀ ਮੈਂ ਜਗ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਬਦਲਦੇ ਵੇਖੇ ਆਪਣੇ ਮੈਂ ਰੱਬ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਚੱਲ ਜਰ ਹੀ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ ਵਜੇ ਹੁਣ ਤੂੰ ਵੀ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਤੇ ਵਜੇ ਹੁਣ ਕਿਤੇ ਜਾਵੀ ਨਾ ਤੂੰ ਆਖਰੀ ਉਮੀਦ ਮੇਰੀ ਟੁੱਟ ਕਿਤੇ ਜਾਵੀ ਨਾ ਲੁੱਟੀ ਹੋਈ ਨੂੰ ਵੇ ਜਾਨੀ ਲੁੱਟ ਕਿਤੇ ਜਾਵੀ ਨਾ ਮੈਂ ਝੂਠ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਸੱਚ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਮੈਂ ਬਦਲਦੇ ਪੱਥਰ ਵੇਖਣੇ ਮੈਂ ਕੱਚ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਚੱਲ ਚੱਲ ਹੀ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ ਸਾਥ ਤੇ ਵੀ ਮੇਰਾ ਤੂੰ ਜੇ ਰੋਲਣਾ ਵੀ ਏ ਤੇ ਫਿਰ ਚੰਗੀ ਤਰ੍ਹਾਂ ਰੋਲ ਵੇ ਮੈਂ ਚੰਦ ਬਦਲਦਾ ਵੇਖਿਆ ਤਾਰੇ ਬਦਲਦੇ ਵੇਖੇ ਮੈਂ ਹਾਏ ਲੋੜ ਪੈਣ ਤੇ ਦੁਨੀਆਂ 'ਚ ਸਾਰੇ ਬਦਲਦੇ ਵੇਖੇ ਮੈਂ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਸਭ ਕੁਛ ਬਦਲ ਗਿਆ ਮੇਰਾ ਚੱਲ ਚੱਲ ਹੀ ਜਾਵਾਂਗੀ
Hello, dear listeners. I hope you have been enjoying the music. But now it is time for our short story of the week. This one is really special to me, so I hope you really like it. The night was quieter than usual. Not the kind of quiet that comforts you, but the kind that feels like the world is holding its breath. Aarav noticed it the moment he stepped out of the radio station. The usual hum of late-night Kingston, distant laughter, a passing car, even the wind brushing past the trees, all of it felt paused, suspended. But then he heard it, a note. Not from his headphones, not from anywhere visible, a single lingering sur. Sur means note in Hindi and Punjabi. Aarav froze. That sur, or note, carried something he couldn't quite explain. It felt older than memory, older than language, and somehow it was calling him. And he followed it. Through narrow alleyways, past buildings he had walked by 100 times but never truly seen, the sound grew richer, unfolding into a phrase now, unmistakably a rag, but not one he recognized. Finally he stopped, in front of a door. It stood alone, where there should have been nothing, no building, no wall, just a tall wooden door carved with intricate patterns. The carvings pulsed faintly, like they were breathing. And at the center, etched in delicate script, "Songs forgotten are never lost." Aarav's heart started racing. He should have turned back, but he didn't. He placed his hand on the door, and it opened. Inside, there was no room. There was a sky, a vast, endless expanse of twilight with stars shimmering like notes suspended in time. Floating in this space were hundreds of glowing fragments, each one resonating with sound. Rugs. But not the ones that he knew. These felt, I don't know, older, untouched for centuries. A voice emerged, soft yet powerful. "Few hear them, and fewer answer." Aarav turned. An old figure stood there, draped in light and shadow, their presence shifting like music itself. "Where am I?" Aarav whispered. "In the archive of sound that time forgot," the figure gestured around. "These are rags that were never written, never passed down. Some were lost to history, others abandoned." Aarav stepped forward, mesmerized. Can I hear them?" The figure smiled. "You already are listening to them." One fragment drifted toward him. As it touched his fingertips, the world dissolved. He was no longer standing. He was inside the music. He stood in a desert at dusk. The sky burned orange and violet, and the air carried a melody woven with longing. Each note stretched like the horizon, vast and aching. The rag wasn't just sound. It was emotion. It was memory. It was a story. Aarav felt it move through him. Not just into his ears, but into his very chest, his breath, his pulse. He understood it. And without words, when the final note faded, he was back, breathing heavily. "What was that?" And the figure replied, "A song that was once sung only at the edge of endings." Aarav spelled what felt like hours, maybe days, moving through the songs. Each of them was its own world. One was rain falling on ancient temples, and another one was a celebration that never ended. But there was one that was silent. A rag built on pauses where what wasn't played mattered more than what was played. And with each note, Aarav changed. His understanding deepened. His voice, when he tried to hum along, felt different. It felt stronger. It felt truer. Finally, the figure spoke again. You have listened, but listening is only the beginning. Arav looked up. What do you mean? These rugs do not exist to be stored. They exist to be lived. The fragments around him began to dim. They need a voice, a vessel, somebody to share it with the whole damn world. Arav felt it before he could respond. The music, all of it, calling him. And he asked, why me? And the figure said, because you didn't come here looking for power. You came because you heard something you did not quite understand, and you chose to follow it. And the door appeared again. Behind it, the real world, the real Kingston, the radio station, all of it, his life. And the figure said, you can leave and forget, or you can carry them with you. You see, Arav hesitated, but then he stepped forward. The moment he crossed the threshold, the world rushed back. Sound returned, cars, voices, the wind, but something was quite different. He was different. That night, on his radio show, Arav didn't play his usual set. He sat in silence for a moment and then spoke. Tonight, I am not playing music. I'm telling you a story, quite like I am right now. He closed his eyes and began. The first note he sang. It wasn't perfect, it wasn't polished, but it carried something deeper, something ancient. Listeners across the city paused. They didn't know why, but they felt it. Days passed, then weeks. Arv's music began to spread, not because it was loud, but because it was very real. Each performance carried a piece of something timeless. People described it differently. Some said it felt like remembering something they had never known. Others felt like it was being seen. And sometimes, late at night, when the world went quiet again, Arav could hear it. Another note, another rag, waiting. Because the door never truly closed. And somewhere beyond what we can hear, there are still melodies. Perhaps melodies of myth, waiting for someone brave enough to listen. And with that, we will continue with our music.
Spring is in the air, which means it's time once again for the Banri Foundation's annual spring celebration. Join us as we recognize the incredible achievements of mature women students at Queen's University. The festivities will take place at Grant Hall on May 2nd at 2 p.m. This is a free event and everyone is welcome to attend. Find event details by visiting the Banri Center website, following us on Instagram or Facebook, or emailing brc@queensu.ca. Come celebrate exceptional women with us. See you there!
Are you between 14 and 30 years old and interested in organizing a French language activity for youth in your community? The VIF program can make it happen. You could receive $850 to create your activity, and your partnering organization could get $150 to support it. Bring your idea to life. Visit programvif.ca and apply today.
रखदा नहीं कोई दूसरी मैं शर्ता भी रखदा नहीं क्या तेरे बाजो मेरा सच्चिया मोहब्बत है वही कितने और नहीं हो मिले जितने भी तो चले
प्यार दिया गल्ला वे हौली हौली तू दस दा इन अखियां छुपा किवें कजलावे अखियां च तू बस दा मसा मसा जिंदड़ी में प्यार विच रंगी वे अज मैनू जापदा मैं तेरे नाल मंगी वे तेरे नाल मंगी वे अज खुशियां दा हो गया सवेरा वे गम साथों दूर नसदा इन्ना अखियां छुपावां के कजलावे अखियां च तू वसदा इन्ना अखियां छुपावां के कजलावे इन्ना अखियां छुपावां के कजलावे अखियां च तू वसदा वे अखियां च तू बसदा ओए अखियां च तू बसदा
And just like that, we arrive at the end of tonight's journey. Well, this afternoon's journey. Yeah, I just want to leave you guys with some thoughts. If there's one thing music teaches us, it's that silence is never empty. It holds what came before and what's still waiting to be heard. There's moments, small ones, when someone, something calls out to us. A melody, or a memory, or a feeling that we don't fully understand. And we have a choice to ignore it or to follow it. Music, especially in Hindustani classical, was never meant to be heard. It was meant to be felt. So maybe tonight you don't open a magical door, but listen a little closer to the songs that you love and the silence in between. Thanks for spending your time here with me on Melodies of Myth. I will see you next week.
Tu as 14 à 30 ans et tu veux créer une activité en français pour les jeunes de ta communauté? Avec le programme VIF, c'est possible. Tu peux recevoir 850$ pour soutenir ton activité et l'organisme partenaire reçoit 150$ pour appuyer. Passe à l'action et fais rayonner le français dans ta communauté. Visite programmevive.ca et dépose ta demande dès maintenant.
On CFRC 101.9 FM every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m., you'll hear Finding a Voice. My name is Bruce, host of that poetry-focused spoken word program. On it, you'll hear local readings and events, occasionally telephoned interviews across Canada, and always a touch of music. Again, Finding a Voice, here every Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. Check it out. Hope to catch you there.
Today on Wings, we return to the World Women's Congress for a Healthy Planet, Miami, 1991, for the conclusion of Wings' documentary, Agenda to Save the Planet. Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
It almost gets to be tiresome to have to continue and repeat, as we do, that women must be part of decision making. But if we keep saying it long enough and act upon it, as we're trying to do here, it will come about.
former U.S. Congresswoman Bella Abzug convened 1,500 women from 83 countries to prepare a consensus document about what women want to see on the agenda of the June 1992 United Nations Conference on Environment and Development. A resolution calling for equal participation by women was the first item agreed upon by the participating nations. Now the issue is whether this was only lip service.
We're not going to ask for much. But for starters, a lot of talk has been made here about women's participation in decisions. So we suggest no more than 60% or less than 40% of either sex should be included in leadership posts in the United Nations, its specialized agencies and programs, in governments and public policy making groups in every region in the world, and especially in the member delegations that go to Rio in June. We're not going to ask for much. We only think we should get about half of international development funds and resources allocated to women's programs and projects in developing countries, in compensation for 46 years of underfunding the needs of women and children, the poorest of the poor. We're not going to ask for much. We're going to ask for a very important thing, and that is that unless and until men and women together share in the responsibilities, share in the obligations, and share in the rights and the production and distribution in this world will not be able to continue.
Rosalie Bertel, a Canadian epidemiologist, was one of 15 experts who formally testified at the World Women's Congress for a Healthy Planet. She was one of many whose testimony helped shape the Women, Militarism, and the Environment section of the 71-point Women's Action Agenda.
It's our earth. It's all we have. It's our air. It's our water. It's our food. It's babies, it's the future. And it has been seriously damaged and seriously jeopardized, which is why we are here. And I like the analogy of the bathtub, and I would like to put the plug in, because we can't keep running the water and having it run out. And I think the plug is the military, that we have to deal with that.
We demand nuclear weapons be dismantled and destroyed, that nuclear testing cease immediately. We've got lots more in this lot. We demand that space activities and supersonic flight, which threatens the ozone layer or releases carbon dioxide, cease. We urge an immediate 50% reduction in military spending. We demand creation of national civilian commissions with 50% membership of women, which would open to public scrutiny all military activities, expenditures, and research and development. We demand that national armies be converted into environmental protection corps, which would monitor and repair damage to natural systems, including cleanup of military bases, and be available to assist citizens in times of natural and man-made disasters. We condemn governments that turn their armies against their citizens, leading millions of individuals to become refugees and displaced persons. And we will educate our daughters and sons to shun military service if it is in the service of governments which use military power to exploit the resources and people of other nations.
The war cause of the military-industrial complex. The bombs dropped there, now we're dying of cancer, the chickens are coming home to roost in our own environment.
While the wars have been fought, and we are supposedly at peace, the casualties of war are here. We are the casualties of war, especially the ones that live around the military facilities. And we're not recognized as such, but we are the ones that they experiment on first for the nuclear weapons and for all the weapons that they're making. And we are the ones that are, there's women that are bathing their babies in Rocky Mountain flats that have nerve gas products in their water.
The way we unmask the wolf in sheep's clothing is to find if they bring us poison, to find if they bring us sickness, to find if they bring us death. And we must uncover it, and we must demand accountability and destruction and elimination of this whole secret military system which destroys our earth and its livability. I think women are going to have to take the initiative, and women's groups are going to have to take the initiative to look at their own nation and to begin to issue report cards, to begin to say, are we going in the right direction or are we deteriorating? And if we are deteriorating, why? So one of the things that we're calling for political action is to begin to critically rate our own nations in terms of five things. One is the health of the natural environment. The second thing we'd like to look at is the health of the value system which is motivating and driving our nation. The third thing is the health of the political system and the participatory nature of our nations. What kind of marks would they get? The fourth is the health of resource distribution and the households of our nation. And the last and fifth is the health of our human development systems. And I think the things we care about fall into all five categories. And I must thank Eva Nordlund from Norway for pulling together the report card system and giving it life and bringing it to this conference.
We hope that someday, pretty soon, we will not only have a UN Security Council for military questions, but a UN Health Security Council. And we women can bring from all the countries in the world our report cards, what the progress is in our countries relating to the political system, the value system, the natural system, and our children and our old people. So this is the idea. Thank you very much.
Just a short question on the report cards about which you talked just now. Some of them seem to require a little more specialized knowledge to answer. So what sort of groups do you have in mind for filling in these report cards?
The report cards have two parts. One is a general overall estimate of your nation. You know, do we have problems in the area of our value system or our politics? And is anything being done about it? Has there been any progress? Are there efforts? Do we rate fairly well in this? And are we improving and are we sharing? There is a second section which is more quantified, which has to do with how much literacy in our country, what is the equity between genders in our country, how many people have shelter, how many people are malnourished, and so on. So there are some attempts also to quantify the health of our nation. and to put these together to find the health of our region, the health of our world. Because it's only if we make progress on every one of these fronts that we will have a healthy planet.
We have to clear up the mess, so to speak, and therefore we have a right to question the people who created the mess. Should we also not insist that those who created the mess themselves clean it up also?
One of the five judges of the tribunal, Justice Sujata Manohar from the Bombay High Court, questions witness Peggy Antrobus, a development specialist from Barbados.
You asked, shouldn't the people who create the mess clean it up themselves? Yes, I mean, that is one of the things that... But if you ask the industrialists who are creating the mess to clean it up, it costs them more money, it'll affect their profits, and that is where the resistance comes from, because they're not prepared to do that.
We call for the creation of a permanent UN Environmental Commission to serve as an ombudsperson, receive individual complaints, monitor compliance, and enforce principles of an international code of environmental ethics. We require all states and corporations who produce toxic chemical agents to dispose of their toxic wastes within their own borders.
On Wings, you're listening to voices and ideas from the World Women's Congress for a Healthy Planet.
Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, another witness, is a former finance minister of Liberia and worked on trade issues for the World Bank.
Disproportionate distribution of and access to world resources has served to keep a few countries rich, very rich, and the majority of countries poor, very poor.
Jacqueline Pitangui, former president of the National Council of the Rights of Woman, Brazil.
I just wanted to bring another perspective to the discussion. It's not exactly a question, but I think that we have to think of logics and what kind of logics are going on maximization of profit and maximization of chances of survival. We cannot talk of environment without considering that the poor people, and the poor people, which is the majority of the population in our countries, they are maximizing their chances of survival because there is a maximization of profit going on the economic values and on the market values. But the logic is the same. It's at the expenses of the nature. And it's to guarantee their survival today that they have to cut the trees, they have to put earth on an ecosystem and build a house there, or the floods will come and will destroy because there was deforestation. And I think that the North has pointed a finger to us too much, as though the poverty was not considered. So I think that North and South are linked by this logic of maximization of profit, which is perverse. It is a perverse trend because there is maximization of profit at the expenses of nature, which leads to the need to maximize the chances of survival also at the expenses of nature. And I think those two questions have to be considered when we talk about the value of ecosystems and find the measures to deal with it.
We call for the renegotiation of terms of trade that will ensure an equitable relationship between the price of raw materials and prices of manufactured goods.
A creative approach to trade imbalance and third world debt came out of discussion in a workshop.
I'd like to suggest, as a member of the third world, that one of the things for us that would equate the present debt we carry is if you did an environmental audit historically. We do an audit of the ecosystems as they existed in 1940s after the war. We see where they are, we see who the user was, and we see who the net beneficiary was. And if we can get a net beneficiary assessment, then for Guyana, we will know that Canada made money off of our bauxite, Britain made money out of our lumber, so-and-so made money out of thing, and maybe we can cancel our debt just based on that.
We suggest that historic audits of nation states from 1945 onward be conducted to determine the net beneficiaries of natural resource exploitation, an assessment which would serve as the basis of to cancel current debt.
Foreign debt is a matter of crucial importance to women in developing countries because it is being used by the World Bank and International Monetary Fund to force cuts in public services. Every lost daycare center or public bus or hospital bed or food subsidy or public sector job forces more unwaged work on women whose contribution to sustaining life isn't counted in the gross domestic product.
We call for the rejection of structural adjustments policies, SAPs, we shift the responsibilities of basic social services from governments to women without compensation or assistance.
Nancy Barry is on leave from the World Bank to serve as president of Women's World Banking, which helps poor women start their own lending institutions.
What structural adjustment lending is balance of payment support, essentially in exchange for governments changing their macroeconomic policies and opening up their economies and reforming their financial systems and privatizing their public enterprises. The World Bank talks a lot about the supply response. Basically, the supply response means that economies grow, that exports improve, that poor people increase their income. And in order for that to happen, you cannot expect that you change the exchange rate, liberalize imports, and the rest will take care of itself. I mean, that is an absurd proposition. One of the things that the World Bank really needs to worry about now is getting more people at the technical level and at the managerial level who are not macroeconomists. One of the problems in going through 10 years of the macroeconomist as king is that even when the World Bank figures out, as it has internally, that structural adjustment has not worked terribly well and certainly not the way it was done, those are the people that are still running the show.
The ludicrous inadequacy of current economic theory was the text of testimony by Marilyn Waring, a well-known feminist economist and former member of New Zealand's parliament.
First of all, the boys are calling a whole new field of study ecological economics. It's a bit of a problem with eco, of course, the Greek derivation from home, and the way the boys treat ecological economics, it doesn't have a great deal to do with home. It uses, it would be suggested, conventional economic tools, despite all the caveats which the boys enter about how these are not really appropriate and it's very difficult to cram them all into one system, etc. For those of you who aren't up with the play, growth is anything that passes through the market for which cash is exchanged. There isn't a debit side of growth, so it's not like running the housekeeping. And there isn't a legal or illegal demarcation either, so that it's really good for growth to smoke lots of cigarettes, have lots of car accidents, wars are sensational, a few eggs on Valdez's into icebergs are extremely good. I don't know why people worry about Noriega. I mean, illegal drugs are what a lot of the South even produces to even get any form of growth rate.
Waring's testimony brought about resolutions calling for differentiation between constructive and destructive production, and another opposing environmental accounting. Marilyn Waring.
We must fight very hard what is happening. The United Nations Statistical Office has already approved the establishment of environmental accounts inside the system of national accounts. They will involve the commodification of everything that can be perceived as having a market value. But these things are nightmares because, of course, national income accounting works inside nation states. And one of the things that nature can teach us, thankfully, is that it doesn't know anything about nation state boundaries. Is acid rain going to be recorded as a natural export to Canada? And quite where is Canada going to record this now in its income accounts? And the same for Norway. Is it going to think that it just got some aid from the UK when the next lot of acid rain hits? Or, you know, where is it quite supposed to pop it? And in the Pacific, when the French exploded another bomb in Mururoa, and we would just like to send it home to Paris, but it doesn't work like that. When we get our dead fish and our jelly babies and our leukemia, just quite where are we supposed to record this in our national income accounts? So I have some trouble with the fact that we even think that we can number crunch it inside a nation state context. But the inability to attribute a market value to part of the ecosystem doesn't mean that it's not worthy of consideration. But the treatment of the environment in national accounts and in public policy reproduces the arrogant ideology that only money is of value and only the market is a source of knowledge.
The Secretary General of the United Nations Conference on Environment and Development attended the final plenary of the Congress. He heard the statement by the five judges who weighed the formal testimony.
Secretary General Morris Strong and honored guests, I want to introduce them to you individually. The Honorable Justice Elizabeth Ebert from Australia, the Justice Desiree Bernard of Guyana, Justice Siyata V. Manohar from India, Lady Justice F.E.U.R. from Kenya, and Judge Margareta Wattstein of Sweden. I now call upon the Honorable Justice Elizabeth Evatt of Australia to render the decision of the tribunal.
If I could turn now to what we've called the declaration of the tribunal of the Miami World Women's Congress for a Healthy Planet. We believe that to tackle the problems that have identified by the many speakers here at this Congress, the actions of state governments, international agencies, private organizations and individuals should be guided by three basic principles. They are first, global equity, second, resource ethics, and third, empowerment of women. As to global equity, the global environment is the necessary condition of life. As such, it cannot be the exclusive preserve of any individual. The principle of equity should guide states individually and collectively in determining who has access to and use of basic resources. The first priority should be given to meeting the basic human rights and needs of all people, especially the right of everyone to an adequate standard of living, including adequate food, clothing and housing, and to the continuous improvement of living conditions. I quote there from the Covenant on Economic, Social and Cultural Rights. Those principles should guide financial and economic policies. The second principle, resource ethics. The use of natural resources should be guided by ethical principles, which balance the need for material progress with the sustainability of resources, and which base living standards on long-term sustainability and on responsibility towards future generations. The third principle is the empowerment of women. The women's perspective, which recognizes that meeting human and social needs is a goal of higher importance than economic progress for its own sake, must be brought to bear on global problems of environmental destruction and poverty arising from inequitable access to necessary survival resources. Women must be empowered at all levels to contribute to the achievement of the principles of equity, social justice, and ethics.
In responding to the women's agenda, Secretary General Strong pointed out it would be difficult to get substantive results from the Earth Summit in Brazil. Magda Renner, spokesperson on environment for Brazil's National Confederation of Women, offers advice for the event.
I have been for 2 years at the NGO World Bank Committee and always behaving very well and writing hundreds of papers and making thousands of suggestions, which then always were considered very enlightening, but nothing happened. But when we went into the streets with our big banners, standing in New York where it was forbidden to stay, and the police came, then it was an affair, and then suddenly all those men started listening to what we were saying. So we must be visible when all the dignitaries, the powerful men are coming to Brazil in Rio de Janeiro. We must be there, we must be standing in the streets. We must be crying out at them. We're not behaving so well as we always do, just standing there. Yeah, it's true. Just standing, just hearing, and not having the possibility to speak. So if we don't have the possibility to speak during the official meetings, let us stand in the streets where those men have to pass to go into their beautiful cars. And let us make our demonstrations there.
Give us back our rainforest in the heart of the Amazon. Give us back our oceans pure as they were when the world was young. Give us back our air so sweet that the beat on nature runs. Let the hungry child be fed the dinosaur.
This concludes the two-part documentary, Agenda to Save the Planet, produced by Frieda Worden and funded by Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book Forgiving, A Feminist Criticism of Exchange. For more about WINGS, check our website, www.wings.org, or email wings@wings.org. The old WINGS sound logo you heard in this show was created by Maggie Payne. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Yo, Ellie.
Hey, Nate, what's up?
We're on the radio!
What? Like right now?
Yeah, it's on a promo from Live Sessions.
Oh yeah, CFRC Live Sessions, Thursdays at 11 a.m.
Listen to sexy bands play live on air and hear exclusive interview highlights.
Sounds awesome. Tune in on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Lit. Okay, peace out, dude.
See you Thursday.
Hey, it's Emily Steele, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.